Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers, by young farmers, recorded live and every week on Heritage Radio USA. I am happy to be joined today by Jeremy, who is farming and organizing out in Michigan. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey, how you doing?
How's it going over there?
Not too bad. It's a beautiful day here in Michigan.
It's a beautiful day here. Where I am too. How did Sandy hit you, or did it at all?
Did not at all. Maybe just a little light, some winds and cold weather for a little bit afterwards. But no, we don't get affected by hurricanes yet.
Well, we'll just wait for it. Let's talk about where you live and why you felt like doing some organizing around and farming in the city, and how that all got started.
Okay, well, I could start, or you can ask me some questions. I'll just get going. And
you can start with, tell us about the place where you live and why you felt like gardening was a good thing to do there.
Okay, well, I live in Battle Creek, Michigan. It's a town of about 50,000 people, home of Kellogg Corporation, and It's a pretty depressed area economically, a lot of vacant land, a lot of houses that have been torn down, maybe a little bit of a resurgence in the last few years, but I have been a backyard gardener for 15 years and worked in food justice and food cooperatives and as a community organizer, and getting to know people in my community. Found that a lot of folks realized, as I did, that there was just a lack of locally grown food, lack of healthy food options, a lot of vacant space being unkempt, and so a lot of us kind of put our heads together and created a grassroots movement to repopulate this vacant land and grow food for people there.
So I like this about community organizing. Could you explain a little bit some of the principles that you carry around in your head that maybe you don't articulate necessarily so deliberately on a day-to-day basis, but maybe you do deliberately say them in grant proposals. But many times people are not familiar with what community organizing is, even though Obama was one. Can you just say what that is to you?
Yeah, I can definitely explain it. Oftentimes people ask me when I say that I'm a community organizer, they say that I could be president. That's funny. I don't desire to be president, but our president has done a lot more than just be a community organizer. And I think the term has been tainted in the past few years because of politics. Community organizing is a multi-partisan, community empowerment approach. To me, community organizing is it's more of kind of a reminding of people that, they hold the power to make any change happen in their community, and that people are in charge, and with large numbers, you can really do anything. Positive things, and I guess, negative things can come from community organizing as well. It just depends on what you want to call it. One of my approaches, and this is common, community organizing approach, it's not something that I invented or anything. It's really about building relationships. It's about making friends. I think, in our age of technology and smartphones and Facebook. We all have some, you know, faux friends, but we don't necessarily have real, you know, a lot of real relationships based on real conversations and getting to know people and their passions and what lights a fire under them, what gets them to do whatever it is that they do, throughout their day, throughout their lives. And so, community organizing is talking to people, finding, sometimes you have to have difficult conversations, which it's really hard for people to do in a PC age, and find out what got them where they are. It's not scientific by any means. It's really just talking to people and listening. And, not forgetting that, even as a community organizer, you have your own self-interest. So everybody has self-interest and passion, and how do we marry groups of people's different passions into, common causes and find things that we can work together on to make our communities better places. And so sometimes that's, figuring out a way to get your municipality to fix your sidewalks in a depressed neighborhood that's not taken care of. Other times it's getting together and, building small community-ran businesses, food cooperatives or, just planting flowers along a street. Sometimes it's putting together community gardens. And so that's some of the work that I've been doing is organizing both community gardens. That was kind of our first step, and that really built a kind of a large movement around community food in general in our city. Is that a good answer?
That's a good answer, man. Type that up and send it in. Something I've been talking about lately, with friends in, I was just at a conference out in New Mexico, a ranching conference about managing grasslands and soil carbon and diversity and training new lambs to eat weeds, because their mothers won't eat the weeds, but the new lambs will. Anyway, we were talking about all these things and the systems that we're managing and the context that we're managing and the goals that we're managing for in terms of grasslands, but also in terms of our relationships and the direct relationships that we really actively use as young farmers. And, we were being urged to Facebook this and LinkedIn that and, tweet with the hashtag, and we were thinking, all of that social media, as much as it's nice to see or express our solidarity, with the click of a mouse, so much of that happens through screen interface, and that means that basically you're alone, and that you're basically alone and sitting down somewhere with Wi-Fi, which is very much the opposite of being outside in the middle of your city with people that you may never have known before walking past. Really open and ready to engage. And so, in that sense, community gardening and community organizing are an older kind of, social involvement and social media, and that you have to allow yourself to be open for, what strangers might walk by. I thought maybe you could reflect on, what maybe is a positive part of opening yourself up to strangers, and maybe a little bit explain the succession dynamic of how you guys started that project and then how it's kind of grown based on the relationships that you made in real space, in human space.
Okay. I might not remember all your questions, but I'll try to get some of them, and if I forget something, you just feel free to let me know. So I'm going to remember the one that stuck the most, meeting strangers and managing relationships and how kind of we came to even build a network. I'm definitely an idea person, but and I always have been, but whenever I have great ideas in my head, and then once you talk to other people that have great ideas too, they become much greater ideas. And so definitely not about the I, and it's about collective thinking and knowing that and being comfortable with the fact that whatever you may think about the world or whatever you may think about what might need to happen, there's probably, you know, a bunch of people that agree with you. There's some people that might disagree. There's some people that have some way better ideas. And you have to be open to, you know, kind of being adaptive as, you know, humans. If you're, you know, somebody that even, you know, considers evolution to be something that actually happened, you know, we're an adaptive creature, and nothing good ever comes out of stagnation, and nothing good ever comes out of being, you know, stuck with your own, you know, sort of mindset and values and not being open to what other people think. So, you know, that being said, that was all a little theoretical stuff that I was just saying, but, you know, putting that into application, you know, having a, let's say, building a community garden, and we're not just community gardeners, but that's how we started, by meeting, you know, getting people together in their own neighborhoods and who wanted to grow their own food out of, you know, many different desires. And then getting them into a room together to talk about community assets, talk about, you know, a lot of people are scared of the word assets. It sounds like money, and it sounds like, you know, stuff that rich people have, and, you know, are they the friend or the enemy? It's training people that the word assets has nothing to do with money, but it does have a lot to do with capital, social capital, and ability. And so, you know, everybody has something to offer every situation. And can you be comfortable giving people the power to use, you know, their passions, their skill sets, to make something like collective action really great? So in a community garden, you know, you get together with some people in a neighborhood, and you know, you're certain to have some green thumb, maybe even a couple, maybe even somebody who's only grown in, you know, like post 1950s chemical age, and they're going to be really, it's going to be really hard to, you know, talk them into not using weird chemicals, and somebody who maybe, you know, staunch organic, and getting them to work together, and you know, maybe changing some of their ways together, and then maybe there's an artist. And boy, aren't artists fun to work with sometimes. I'm not an artist, but they make beautiful things. Now, they don't always show up on time, but they make space beautiful, and we need that. We need musicians. We need cooks. We need, you know, there's a place for a lawyer who doesn't even want to get dirty, because they know how to change zoning regulations in your city so that you can sell produce from your community garden, so that you can buy, you know, a rain harvesting system, or you can build a pergola or whatever you want. So I, you know, I think it's very communal, and I use that word like kind of tongue in cheek. A lot of words that I use in community gardening and community food work, they do scare some people because it sounds really hippie and communistic or socialistic, and oh my God, so bad when, you know, when everybody has little pieces of the power. But it's what I, you know, and we have groups of people that are, you know, this is, again, a multi-partisan approach. My favorite thing is to convince Republicans, conservatives, and liberals alike that, you know, food is something that we all eat, something that we can all grow, and having the power to sustain yourself in your own community is, you know, it's both and. There's a place for everybody to get along. I think, you know, having done community organizing in different neighborhoods, you know, a lot of it is sort of a deficit approach look. You know, what are we missing? What do we want from the city? Or what do we want from some, you know, some organization that has power? How do we want them to distribute their power more equally? Whereas, you know, whereas food, it's a really positive thing. Like, we get together and you eat, and you grow food together, and you feed people together. Or, you know, you provide local restaurants with things grown by local farmers and local people, and then, you know, all of a sudden people are talking about some, you know, small 5-acre farm down the road that nobody knew about, and all of a sudden, you know, the brewery is selling their collard greens. I think it's really cool. and I know I'm kind of rambly. That's how my mind works. I'm going to kind of touch base on the succession question that you asked. We had organized a bunch of community gardens, like 35 community gardens here in Battle Creek, and people asked me, or some people on my staff, some of the same kind of questions, like, you know, who's in charge, or what rules do you have for these community gardens? And it's so funny, because it just kind of, it reminds you how society acts often. They want rules, and they want people to tell them what to do. that's not my approach, and nor is that an approach of community organizing. People, you know, our community gardens are autonomous, as are different food systems. Are autonomous, and so they have their own rules. Some of them, you know, build raised beds. Some of them test the heck out of their soil every 3 months. Some of them rotate their crops all around. Some of them plant in circles. Some of them plant in straight rows so that they can use drip irrigation. Some of them harvest rainwater. Some of them don't. And there's also, you know, all kinds of questions and about, you know, what do you do when people steal vegetables from a community garden? That's kind of a funny one, too, because I don't really think that anybody owns the vegetables in a community garden. If somebody stole vegetables from my garden, well, it would, you know, it might stink if I was planning on eating that tomato. I'm kind of under the assumption that that person might be hungry, but certainly the one thing they're not doing is going and taking my tomato and then going and selling it for crack. So I'm not really that mad about it if they're feeding themselves or their family. And maybe if we can, you know, talk to somebody, if we catch somebody, you know, walking through a community garden, because maybe they just don't know about what's going on, and say, hey, you know, this is yours too. Come on, help out. We'll show you how to grow this. And you might not even have to grow it here. You can grow it in your own yard, or you can grow it with us in community. So, you know, there's space for all kinds of people. There's space for, you know, really, you know, extroverted people to get together and, you know, build cob benches and listen to bluegrass music and slap their knees and dance around and weed vegetable gardens and water and, you know, have a really good time. There's also, you know, this place for, you know, the staunch individualists that, you know, just want to make sure that themselves and their family are taken care of. And you know, I think that community food, so I'm saying community food, not just community gardening, but community food work in general kind of can remind us all that food connects us in different ways. And I'm not sure if I answered everything, but I'm done until you give me another prompt. Hello?
Sorry, I put myself on mute. You went on a good roll. And I think that is exactly the kind of complex answer and complex set of relationships and systems and, you know, stakeholder involvement. And, you know, we talked a lot about, again, back reflecting on this conference I just went to, talking about thresholds and, you know, accelerating rejuvenation of ecosystems that, you know, for instance, you're trying to increase the diversity of the plant species that are there in the pasture. You're trying to make better use of planting decisions so that animals will, you know, try new plants and try plants that aren't as palatable to them, and that you essentially set up the conditions for the kind of experience that you're describing in terms of community life, where, you know, one set of actions leads to another set of actions, and that it just accelerates to the point where we, you know, may even consider it to be a fully functional democracy where people are actualizing on their best wishes and acting like citizens and feeling secure enough in their own lives and with their own food to be able to have time to contribute to service. Let's just talk about, where do you think this project could go? You know, what is the potential? What is your highest hopes for what comes out in terms of humans and in terms of food of this community project that you're working on?
Okay. Well, I've been working on some really big sort of flow charts on messy paper, and I probably look like an artist right now to a lot of my friends because it's very scattered. But it helps me kind of wrap all these ideas up. I've came to the realization that it's actually kind of driving towards like an economic development program, you know, where if we are successful, if my organization, Sprout Urban Farms, is successful, we won't need to exist. And that's a really weird, you know, most businesses don't operate on that, you know, kind of mindset, but that's a community organizing thinking, is that, you know, if you're successful in organizing community doesn't need organizers anymore. They all are community organizers. And so if we're successful in creating a healthy and robust community food system, that means that there's ownership at all levels, and whether it's a small food truck that's working with, you know, 10 small farmers and, you know, buying local food, and, you know, and eventually your region itself is sustaining itself together because, you know, your farmers, you get to meet them. You don't even, you don't even necessarily care if they're growing organically, but you know that they grow in chemical-free and sustainable ways because you visited their farm because they had a barn bash, you know, in September, and you checked out their hoop houses, and you know the farmer, and not only do you know that he or she uses sustainable practices or the kind of practices that you want to see and you want to eat from, but that they're real people that make mistakes and try things and learn and fail and succeed so what I would love to have come from our organization's work is that there are you know, multiple community gardens, that there are more backyard gardeners, and maybe that there are programs that are already working, you know, with youth and youth mentoring and senior mentoring, where, you know, maybe there's some folks that can't really get out to community gardens, but they still want to eat healthy in their home, and you either, you know, have, you know, mobile markets delivering food right to neighborhoods, which we have a small one of those, or you have sort of mentorship backyard gardening program where, you know, older folks are working with younger folks right in their own yards to grow things together, start building trust amongst one another. You know, so it's not just about, you know, let's all eat really healthy food, but let's all be really healthy people with each other in relationship, and let's all, you know, let's all be biodiverse together. It's not just a flora and fauna kind of word. You know, it's all connectivity. And again, I know that sounds really, you know, like some hippie talk or something, and I always like to bring that up because I get a lot of people, you know, think that, you know, oh, this is just a little, you know, hippie resurgence movement, and I just completely disagree. While I love where that came from and fight for it in my own, you know, life, it's just something for everybody, and there's a piece for everybody, and it's a when economic times are tough, and in Michigan they are, and they have been for a while, we sit in a really good place, although I think everybody does, to start to, you know, grow your own food and create your own businesses that are related to food. And that goes, I mean, beyond just farming and restaurants and food trucks, and, you know, there's marketing potential, but there's, you know, web designers that, you know, have work now because of this work. So there's a place for everybody, every career touches food. It's really fun to talk about, you know, job possibilities and figure out where, you know, you go to college career fair and you can pretty much find an answer for everybody who has any kind of desire to do anything that in a small agricultural system or even in a big one. I'm sure that, you know, as things localize, and we don't have any delusions of grandeur that everybody everywhere is just going to grow local food and that, you know, there's going to be some sort of like mass industry takeover, and, you know, large industry is not going to exist because it just doesn't seem like that's going to happen. It seems like it's going to be this is a movement where everybody's involved and where we talk about where we as small grassroots people all over the nation and all over the world you know, have the ability to change the ways of thinking of large industry to purchase more regionally. And this is happening with you know, food distributors like Sysco and Gordon Food Service, and I don't even know all of them, you know, providing local foods to universities and hospitals and public schools, and having schools grow their own food, you know, having kids learn science by growing food right outside, getting outside and getting away from the book. And you know, we talk that education, they talk a lot about differentiation and different learners, and yet still there's a lot of people sitting in front of books looking at, you know, blackboards or whiteboards or whatever, and that's not how everybody learns. So really, you know, integrating this into all kinds of classroom settings, I think it can go anywhere. And I think, you know, where I hope it goes with us is that, you know, our organization helps start new business, helps empower people, and, you know, remind them that they have power, and that they can start their own businesses, and that they have to take, you know, maybe take some small risks and work together cooperatively, collaboratively, collectively, you know, whether you want to start a cooperative, or, you know, whether it seems a little bit anarchistic and it's some sort of interesting collective restaurant, or whether it's just a straight small mom-and-pop business, you know, and all these people with their different ideas working together in, you know, at least somewhat pseudo-harmony. It's a lot better than hierarchical systems that exist right now, and I think even those hierarchies that hold power will end up having a place in a much more horizontal like food chain sort of thing.
Yeah, more horizontal food economy, which also means that people have to take responsibility. Like that, you know, we were talking a lot about that. Yes, being a small business owner means you're not working for the man, and that you're in many ways more self-sovereign and in more control of your own destiny. But it also means more responsibility, and so that we, you know, that we have to kind of build the courage to do that part of it also.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We can't just. Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, we have to take responsibility for all of our choices, and whether that's you know, making poor choices to, you know, and maybe it's not always a poor choice to buy the most inexpensive, cheap garbage food and put it in our body because, you know, that's the position that we're in life, but rather to you know, start to, you know, educate our whole community. So I can't, you know, can't complain for somebody who, you know, thinks that they can only afford TV dinners, yet, you know, we can always make those TV dinners healthier. But also, you know, just, you know, I mean, it's a huge community education piece, and you can't, being people that have the knowledge, just kind of hoard it and shun people and talk down to people about, you know, like how they eat or how they consume. I mean, it's a societal problem, and we, you know, those of us who might, you know or think we know the right way to be, it's not our responsibility to just, you know, make people feel bad about their decisions, but rather just to continually educate each other and remind and learn from each other. And that, you know, and while I definitely don't think that I'm, you know, one of the people with all the knowledge that I need to instill upon others, but rather I'm looking for skilling and borrowing great ideas from all kinds of people, but, you know, in different ways than I do, and, you know, even as if my values better than I do, because I'm not perfect, and, you know, I'm trying to just make the best decisions that I can every day, and sometimes I falter, and so do others, and sometimes you just can't help you, but you have to, you know, take responsibility not for yourself in an individualistic sense, but, you have to, you know, think about what does it mean, like what does individuality and freedom really mean? Does it mean that you're a little sovereign nation amongst yourself or in your family? Or is individuality like, you know, the fact that you have a responsibility to share knowledge and to share resources so that your ability to, you know, maintain your own individuality and be creative, and because so that can thrive, and so other people can thrive in that kind of environment as well. I think we've all just been down, you know, like our society has been so globalized and cookie cutter for so long. While there's obviously always pockets of really creative individuality and sustainability out there, that you know, it's our responsibility to be with each other. You know, whether we're the kind of people that share everything, or we're the kind of people that you know, really take care of our own first. You can't take care of yourself without taking care of others. It's impossible.
Well, it's clearly the world that we're going. Although the world that we live in seems to be more and more the same, based on all the evidence, being more different is a good strategy. So maybe leave it there. If people want to find you, they can go to your farm, presumably. Do you have regular volunteer hours, or what are the best ways for folks to get involved, or they want to engage in philosophical conversations?
The best ways for people to get involved with us, coincidentally, is based on technology, through sprouturbanfarms.org or on Facebook. We don't necessarily have regular volunteer hours currently. We work with volunteers either either as needed or as offered kind of basis. It's kind of a little hit and miss. We have regular volunteers that work at individual community gardens. We have an urban farm that's more of a production farm, where we hire youth in the city from all parts of the city to work together, teach them how to farm, teach them how to sell things at market, and we take volunteers there typically it's on like Saturdays when people are more available to volunteer, but we have residents that come out, you know, throughout the week, and they volunteer for produce, or they just volunteer just to give time, you know, and but it kind of happens in a more chaotic way than than some people would like. I thrive kind of in chaos, so it works for us, but it doesn't always work for everybody. Chaos, some people like a little bit more organization, plants don't grow in organized manners, and weather doesn't come in an organized way, and resources, like a guy with a tractor that's willing to till versus an organization that has two oxen that really want to like donate their oxen to plow, those opportunities just kind of happen, and then you scramble to bring people out and help and experience oxen plowing a field, or have kids see those oxen or a big tractor for the first time ever in their city, and it kind of just happens. We don't necessarily have regular volunteer hours, but we have lots of organizations that offer volunteers in different ways. Corporations, and actually, I don't dog on corporations, at least in my community, because they are some of the biggest donors to funders. B, they're some of the biggest donors of sweat equity collectively. And, whether that's for a PR reason or not, we don't care. We just like to play well with everybody. It's kind of like the meet people where they are philosophy. When you're ready to volunteer, or you have an organization or a group of kids or whatever, there are opportunities, and we'll find them immediately within, a day or two. We had some Peace Jam volunteers last week that they were supposed to be helping at some other project, and that project couldn't use them, so they called and they said, "Hey, do you have any, do you have volunteers coming out this Saturday?" And while we didn't, and none of us were even going to be working that Saturday, we changed our schedule, worked around, and we have stuff. We have an old hoop house that needed to be fixed, and some weeding done in the greenhouse, and some harvesting to be done, and we're always adapting and flexible to the needs of our immediate and our expanded community, wherever they are, at whatever point, and whatever knowledge base, whatever age, or wherever they come from.
So that sounds really good, and we'll leave it there. This has been another episode of Greenhorns Radio. That's Urban Sprout Farm in Battle Creek, Michigan, home of the Kellogg Corporation and the Kellogg Foundation, which is a funder of food systems work, especially as it relates to children and fitness. So if you're an urban person doing urban farm stuff and you're listening to this show because of it being about urban farming, consider applying to that foundation for funding. And consider checking out the work that these guys are doing. Okay, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Like a ship on tow.